Welcome to the Healing Soul Podcast, empowering wellness and oneness. I have an amazing guest today that I'm excited to introduce, Melanie Weller. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Melanie?
Sure. Thank you, Mary Beth, for having me today. So I have been in the athletic training and physical therapy worlds for over 30 years now, and I collected credentials like some people collect fine wines. And still there were others I couldn't help, and so I sought more credentials and more courses. And then one day my life was really upside down. I had a health crisis, a marriage crisis, and a lawsuit crisis, all in very short, in very close proximity. And in the midst of all of that, I had like I stepped back and did some reading, and I really turned to astrology to because not that because my all of my conventional wisdom was not making any sense of my life, and the and really stumbled upon this amazing like how we are our anatomy so and physiology so precisely mimics the zodiac, and I know we're going to talk about that today. And in the midst of that, like kind of uncovering all of that, I had a patient walk into my office with his suicide planned for that evening.
My gosh, that's a
And
lot.
it's a lot, right? And I knew I had, he was living in a nightmare of a hallucination, and I knew I had to bring more than just my conventional clinical self to the table that day. And I brought my expertise and my intuition. I brought, did all of my conventional stuff and some, brought it together with this energy system that I've uncovered. And 90 minutes later, he walked out 90% better.
That's like a
And
miracle.
it was a miracle. And I mean, the universe was conspiring for both of us that day, because I also walked out with my fearless presence. Like, we really saved each other that day. And so since then, I've really been passionate about helping people bring together their expertise and their intuition, and uniting ancient and modern science, because the results I get in my practice are so much more. I just get to witness miracles every single day. And when we can bring all of ourselves to the table and really unite this these ancient systems with our modern neuroscience, and I'm uniquely fluent in both of them,
Right.
it's like it is a recipe for miracles every day.
That's amazing. And are you facilitating them realizing their wholeness?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I think when we realize that, like, the miracle that we are, like, we are all breathing miracles, just the fact that we're here, but when we can really be in awe of our own experience and the range of experiences that we can have, and that we have some amount of, to be able to reclaim the power, or your power around what, around your experiences. When I talk to groups, I often use a coffee metaphor in my talk, and that were, and when I talk about my own experience, like I call it my lawsuit latte with the,
I love it.
and how can you sip as fearlessly and deliciously on your lawsuit latte? We all, because life will hand you a coffee that you didn't think you ordered.
Right. I
You know,
love
that
that
happens to all of
analogy.
us.
We all have crises in our lives, and you can decide to have that be your story for the rest of your life, or it can propel you to places that you never imagined you would go and helping thousands and sometimes millions of people.
Absolutely. And that's really the value of a crisis, that it's kind of, I think of my crises and my trauma as their guardrails that kept me on my life path so that I could get done what my soul agreed to get done, or that I could live so much more closely to my soul rather than further away from it. But we are here for the contrast. Like, we experience lots and lots of contrast in our lives, and contrast is the language of the nervous system. Nerves fire, they don't. There's no in between. It's like you can't be half pregnant. You can't be, nerves don't fire. It's an all or, they work on an all or nothing rule. and we call high contrast trauma. And I don't want to minimize how important and it is to, to have trauma-informed care and to really get support to move through those aspects of our lives. But in, as I've, one of the things that astrology has really shown me is that is where I'm the co-conspirator in my own trauma. And where the
That's right. That's true. The choices you make and taking personal responsibility for those choices.
Right. But even beyond, but it's also a lot of power. Like when we think, we're all happy to take credit for the things that we, like the good things that happen in our lives. Oh, look what I did. But we don't really do that for the garbage that happens in our lives.
So true.
And when we have like a very complicated relationship with someone or, something that's really emotionally charged, to go like, oh, wow, that's a lot of contrast. And that kind of, for a lot of people, I find that takes the, gives them a little bit more groundedness in it too. And for all of us, I mean, the research is very clear. When you can put some meaning to it, and where astrology and human design and systems like that are really beautiful, is that because they're storytelling systems fundamentally, that we and we're wired for story, we're not wired for facts. And so when we feel like somebody is treating our, I always say that when you treat somebody's physical body, sometimes their story changes. But when you treat their story, their physical body always changes.
Well, if you change your story by making new choices, there's a shift in perspective of your whole entire life that happens, and your soul can align with your what I call your soul self. The intuition floods you that, hey, you're in alignment now. Right choice. I'm going to open this door and this door and this door and this door for you to keep going.
Absolutely. And I think even when you don't have, sometimes making different choices can be really challenging, or like we all have choices that are out of our control
Change is
sometimes.
hard.
Change is hard, and we're wired for what's familiar, not what's right for us. So it's
Exactly.
the, but that you can see the choices that are happening around you through a different lens.
Right, I get that. It's like that shift in perspective of even if I'm having a really lousy day, I'm going to choose to be happy. And I know that sounds cheesy, but you really can. Go for a walk, and oh, isn't that beautiful? And have some gratitude, and it does change your perspective and your mood, and you can lift your vibration. And I think a great way of lifting your vibration is breath work. How do you feel about breath work
Oh,
and calming your body and
breath work is very powerful. For I will say for most people, the because some for some people, and you just have to test this in your body. For some people, breath work can really be threatening, but certainly breath is the defining thing about why we're here. Our hearts sit on top of our diaphragms, just like a sunrise sits on top of a horizon. The sun sits on the horizon at sunrise or sunset. And I like to think of our diaphragms as our personal earth, because certainly we're not earthbound if we're not breathing.
Right. That makes sense.
And but trauma can sometimes make breath work threatening to people, or you have to make the you have to choose the right breath exercise. There are some exercises that are more universally, or more widely tolerated by the nervous system, by breath work
Right.
than others. And certainly breath work has become very popular. I deal with a lot of people that have very high levels of trauma. And so I'm very, when I work with people one-on-one or teach, I very like I always, it's very important just to take a baseline assessment of where your body is
Right,
right now.
cognizant of what they can handle.
You're right, because it has to be dosed properly. Like any medicine, like you wouldn't take a whole bottle of Tylenol if you had a
Of
headache. You
course,
would just take one
right.
or two. And so sometimes really all you need is one or two good breaths to calm your nervous system.
I like the bumblebee breath where you breathe in through your nose, you shut your mouth, and then you hum. The act of humming is very calming to a lot of people. And I do seminars, and the bumblebee breath, it calms me down before I give a big talk in front of people, and it connects to the vagus nerve that goes throughout your whole entire body.
It does. Well, and breath work does too, because your vagus nerve is really integral in your lungs. And so it's there are, and it is a big nerve. It does a lot of things. And so it's hard to almost any exercise you do for any reason is going to have some vagus nerve influence
Because it's everywhere.
because it's everywhere, because it goes all the
Right.
way from your brain stem down into the pelvis. You can be where I get really specific with it is where it mechanically gets compressed in the body because your vagus nerve can get pinched, just like if you have a pinched nerve in your neck or a pinched nerve in your low back. That your vagus nerve can get pinched in your body, and it is more likely to get pinched at specific thresholds. And when somebody has, like, for example, the gentleman I told you about at the beginning who came into my office with his suicide plan for that evening, he had systemic vagus nerve compression. Like he was locked down at every segment, and he was,
I was going
and
to
he.
ask you, I'm sorry not to interrupt, but
That's okay.
so that where it's blocked, does that correlate with the emotional stress that you're having in your life?
It can absolutely. I will tell you, it absolutely correlates with the intersection of zodiac signs.
Oh, that, let's get into that because we talked about that before we got on air about the zodiac being in your body and how you got downloads on all this information. It's fascinating.
Yeah. So the, I'll just say, like, fundamentally, when we get stressed, like we'll just talk very practically first before we get into the zodiac. Nobody gets stressed or traumatized and walks down the sidewalk or, walks with really great arm swing, with really great rotation. We all lock up, we pull our arms in close and we stiffen up. So rotation is really the biggest thing that we give up in trauma with movement. And rotation is clinically often the last thing movement professionals are trained to give people back. And there are some good, like for somebody that's, for example, that has a herniated disc, you have to be very cautious with rotation because that can be aggravating to their symptoms at certain stages of the recovery. But the point is, like, nobody, we all have this experience. Like, nobody has nice fluid movement when we're stressed and traumatized, where our shoulders go up to our ears, our, shoulders like a rotate, we slump our shoulders, protect our hearts, and come in. And those horizontal thresholds are, or they include the base of your skull, your vocal cords, your across your collarbones, a series of structures called your thoracic inlet, your diaphragm, and your pelvic floor. And there's a few, excuse me, a few others in there too. But in astrology, the zodiac signs are all associated with body parts, and there's a whole subset of astrology called medical astrology. So,
Fascinating.
and so what? In the midst of, in the throes of my own midlife crisis, what I uncovered was really two separate things. One, that the cosmology, the angle, like important angles in cosmology, like in literal, like the angles between the pole stars that the Earth orients towards over thousands of years, and the axial tilt of the Earth are like live in our body in very important biomechanical and anatomical angles.
That be in our physical body.
So for example, normal rotation between your first and second cervical vertebrae is 47 degrees, and there's 47 degrees between the pole stars that the Earth orients towards over
Interesting.
thousands of years, and the anterior cruciate ligament in the knee is an average 47 degree angle of inclination. And if you were just going to take those two things, that so the neck restriction would go with people that have headaches, dizziness, and neck pain. And the knee, your ACL, certainly we involved with lots of sports injuries and, over time, arthritis in the knee and, different kinds of knee pain. And if you just took the number of doctor's visits that those drive every year, that's a lot of doctor's visits.
It is.
And the but there's so there's all the, I call these critical angles in the body. And even your vagus nerve comes exits the base of your skull 23 and a half degrees from the center of where your spinal cord does. And the Earth right now is about a 23 and a half degree tilt. And so that opening of the where the vagus nerve exits on either side is correlates with those, like the range of axial tilt of the Earth over time too.
That's fascinating. It's like our bodies are the microcosm connecting to the macrocosm.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I deal with a lot of people with religious trauma. And when I think about being made in the image of God, like this is it. You know, we just don't have the dark skies anymore. We have so much light pollution, we can't see it. But this is what
Right.
people meant because they're ancient, that same, they're these ancient stories in astrology and the Bible and the Vedas are all stories of our anatomy and physiology.
Well, if you ever get a chance, go to Utah and some of the national parks because there are dark skies where you can literally lay on a blanket and look up and see the planets and the stars, and there's not any light pollution to
Oh, it's
interfere with the
so,
night sky.
yeah. No, it is. It's so good. I have a favorite spot in West Texas that I go to for that. And it's, yeah. And it's just so much information you could, and to really even get a little glimpse of the way ancient people saw the skies. And I still don't think, you know, I still think that even in our dark sky areas, that it's not quite as dark as it used to be, you know, or there's
Right.
pieces of, you know, even like my dad growing up in Idaho, you know, he sees pictures. He's like, oh, that's what the sky looked like when I was growing up. And like, I've never seen anything like what he, you know, with the naked eye, like with, you know, the pictures are always with these very elaborate cameras of photographers, you know, that photographers use and things like that. So I'm still not 100% convinced that we're seeing exactly things exactly the way that they used to be, but it is, but a dark sky, but it's certainly closer, and you can see the how they came up with the animals and archetypes with the stars because it's like you can see the lines that connect them, and it's really like the whole zodiac really comes and the constellations really come to life in those dark sky areas. So when one of the things that so when I was kind of figuring all this out and going, oh my gosh, I'll look at all these angles. You know, and being able to pull up all of my biomechanical knowledge that has lived in my head over the years and start to match these things, I also pulled out this image of it's a of the ventricles. It's a compilation of MRI images to give you a 3D picture of the ventricles of the brain. And this is old, like this is probably a picture that was compiled in like the 90s. So that, you know, the technology now to image those things is much better than it was back then. And I've showed this picture to patients for forever and ever because it's my favorite picture of anything ever. And it has, and I love doing cranial work. And I love, you know, when people get there, when your cerebral spinal fluid is pumping well, it's like a lot of things are better. And your cerebral spinal fluid is this, or your cerebral spinal fluid flow is a pulse that conventional medicine doesn't really acknowledge
The cranial sacral.
for the craniosacral.
Okay.
But in the research, you know, and I like my craniosacral training came from Michigan State University's College of Osteopathic Medicine. Like this didn't come from like, you know, like I didn't come from some woo,
I'm from Michigan, so that's
you
good.
know, like
Yeah.
you know, made up kind of thing. Like this is real stuff that real doctors
Right.
are doing in real universities and really researching. So it's
I
a
love it.
very
Yeah.
tangible thing. But what they taught is that when we die, our cranial rhythms last at least 20 minutes after our heart and brain activity stops.
Interesting.
So it's a very primal pulse. And I think when I think about it mechanically, I think, well, there's probably a lot of momentum in the system to keep it going that long after we die. So anyway, I've showed this picture to people forever and ever. And when I pulled it out after I'd been studying astrology, I looked at it and I said, oh, that looks like the ram's horns that represent Aries.
Oh, I'm
And I know,
Aries.
I am too. And I know that
Okay.
in astrology, Aries rules the head. And so then I was like, oh, well, where is the rest of it? And sure enough, it's all there, hidden in plain sight, in the order of the zodiac from your head to your toe. So if we're I when I talk about the vagus nerve getting compressed at the base of your skull, that your head is Aries, and your throat anatomy looks like the Taurus bull. So that intersection of Aries and Taurus is really where the wh where we get compression. And so one of the questions that I've asked people that evokes often will I've had it often cause people to burst into tears, is where are you being the hero in someone else's story at the expense of your own? Or where are you satisfying everybody else's desires at the expense of your own? And, like to really dig in a little bit of those Aries on Taurus issues, because then that gives you clues to what the stress that they're embodying right there.
A great question.
Because the stress, like, what is that thing that's driving the pain, or where is the, I think the one of the clearest examples of how we hold stress in the body is how Libra rules the kidneys, because the symbol for Libra is scales, and our kidneys sit very much in our low backs like a set of scales. And the populations with the highest levels of social injustice, which is part of scales, represented by scales, justice is, we have scales of justice in many countries and systems do. But w the populations with the highest levels of social injustice have the highest levels of kidney disease.
Interesting.
So we embody the stress of injustice at the level of the kidneys.
Wow.
And so I love this, like that part of the mystery of people's pain, because people don't, historically, I mean, really, for almost all of my clinical life, I have ended up working with the people nobody else could figure out. And so I've learned a lot from doing it that way. And when you can really, like understand what pattern you need to break to get rid of your neck pain, because your body is telling you that this pattern isn't working anymore. And and even beyond the macro anatomy that's so obvious about how our w body mimics the zodiac, are that happens within our cells too, and within our physiology. For sticking with Aries, the stars in the Aries constellation are the same shape as a molecule of ATP, which is the energy source for all cellular function, for muscle contraction as well. And it's the same archetypal function. It's that same Aries initiating energy source
That's interesting.
kind of thing. And so, like in the Vedic astrology world, there is a greater understanding of this, how all the stories of the Vedas really tell the stories of our anatomy and physiology. And so I stumbled upon more resources on that after I got my own download about how Western, just the zodiac and Western astrology live in the body. And it really ties into the science very clearly, because even if you don't believe in astrology, the zodiac is fundamentally a clock, and you can't argue with that, because the sun moves through the zodiac signs. And the research now shows that time perception and processing is at the root of virtually every mental health diagnosis that a lot of neurological ones. And as it's coming out of the sports and orthopedic world, I will say that orthopedic injuries are time perception and processing issues too.
So let me ask you, what exactly do you mean by like time processing issues? Could you like explain that to our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. So in the research, people, depending on like w with people will like overestimate or underestimate a time when given a task in the research. Like, so they're not able to like really have an accurate estimation of what time is. And different parts of your brain interpret, are responsible for interpreting different parts of time. Like your cerebellum does units of time that are less than 1 second, seconds and minutes are more in your frontal lobe. Duration estimation is parietal lobe. But in the time research, they talk about the missing cerebral clock. Like, they know how different parts of the brain manage time, but they don't know where the clock is. And I'm like, oh, the clock is your whole body, because you're made in the image of this great clock that lives in the sky. And so there's, but it's interesting the when you can get, like, even things like setting in the research, like setting expectations influence the timing of signals through your brain. So like I know a lot of therapists will, like you're like when you working with someone, you often set the expectation, what do you set goals and what are the expectations? You have a contract with somebody, what are the expectations? And that literally changes the timing of the way information flows through your brain. And when you can get, and you think about, the one neuroscientist that's well known says that, our brain, the hard science of it is our brains are all, we're all hallucinating. Reality is just the hallucination that we've agreed upon. But when you think about people that have very different life experiences and different, certainly we're in an era of people that have wildly different politics and, and perceptions of that going on, that there's like, why is that reality so different? It's like, well, their experience of time, like their time perception and processing is just like are just very different from one another. And so the more that we can have organized time perception and processing in our brains and in our bodies, the healthier we are.
That makes sense.
And
So
I would
you,
say,
oh, I'm sorry. Do you feel like being present in each moment kind of centers you and aligns you?
yes, but present. So the time science research actually says the present doesn't exist, which I think is, which I kind of love. But it's that word that it's movement, that, time has movement to it. And that's what you, part of what's unique about time. And so,
Right.
yes, we can be present, but we're also moving in time. Time has direction. And the, and I think thinking of it like a, like the hands on the clock have to move, that time has to move, that
Right.
you can be present, but that there's also, but it's not necessarily, still, I think people, especially if they're learning how to meditate, struggle so much with that stillness, but I think
Right.
it's okay to let things, like we are clocks, so things are going to move. And
So
my,
just flow, just like our cells
it is,
regenerate,
it's
our
just like
skin
a, right.
regenerates, everything keeps going. Even if we're sitting here meditating, our cells are still dividing and our bodies are doing the rhythms of
Right, you're never
life.
going to be right as like as it should be. And so to be like to be like still in the movement is really kind of the magic. And where when we get dysfunctional, or when we have things where we can get labeled with diagnoses, like my patient that had his suicide plan for that evening, his it was like his clock had stopped.
Okay.
Time had stopped in his body. It was, and it was very easy. It's very easy to make the case that he was living in rigor mortis because his uncompensated range of motion, like when I really picked apart his fine biomechanics, like he was, like everything was just so incredibly tight. And you wouldn't have necessarily known that seeing him walk down the street because he was compensating really well for it. But the amount of effort it was taking him to move was enormous. And because he was, his body was telling his brain that it was dead because it was so limited. So he was trying to match that on the outside. And when we got all of that moving again, then that took away his drive for suicide. That's an as above, so below rule. And I've seen
That's,
it over and over and over
I was
again.
just going to ask you, so do you, working with people and clients, pay attention to how they move? And you pretty much at this point, you've been doing this for so long, can probably do an educated guess on what's bothering them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I take a history most of the time just because it makes everybody, it makes them feel good to say what's going on. But I don't tend to let people go too deep because I would rather tell them what's going on. And I will tell you, people don't walk into my office and tell me that they have their suicide plan for that evening. They come because they've got physical pain or anxiety or, there's something else going on. And I know what suicide ideation and planning looks like biomechanically. So I ask, I know exactly when to ask about their mental health crisis. And that allows me to help them get better help
Right.
in the moment too. I mean, I can do what I do, but I also think it's important to have a bigger support system as well.
Definitely. So there, I always say, therapy, self-care and therapy and getting as much help as you possibly can until you feel better. And it shows strength reaching out for help.
Absolutely. But what I'd really love for everybody listening to understand is how much your body is driving your thoughts and your mindset and your behavior. That it's not that you can't have a different way of thinking until you have a different way of being, or until you start to really to decompress your vagus nerve, to, we all have a map, our brains all have a map of our body in it. And when that map is fuzzy, when it's less clear, is when we have more problems. So the clearer you can get that map in your brain, the less threat your brain receives, the more likely it is to interpret this a sensation as, or even visual input. Like it, I see a lot of people where just having their eyes open is threatening
Wow.
to their nervous system. And so we have to really train their eyes that it's safe to have your eyes open, or that it's safe to receive visual input. And as you do that, then you can experience pleasure in the body. And but it's very hard to walk through the world when almost everything you're seeing, your body's interpreting it as a threat, or that every breath you're taking, we breathe an average of 21,000 times a day. And if your body is interpreting breathing as threatening to it, that gets to be really messy. That creates a, I mean, that's like what a terrible headspace to end up in,
Right.
like really truly, like to, to, because breathing should absolutely feel free
And life, yeah, you've
in
got to
life and
breathe
everything. But that,
alive, yeah.
right. And for most, for a lot of people, it is for sure. But, I always, I see the people that didn't, don't always follow the textbook rules around those kind of things. And there's ways, when you free up their, free up the geometry of their bodies to
Right.
breathe more easily, then it becomes less threatening. And that, in the nervous system regulation world, there's a lot of people that do this that don't have licenses to touch people, or don't have experience with hands-on
Right.
bodies. And you can get really far a lot of times with nervous system work. But there's also when you can combine that with the geometry of the body and really getting the geometry and the biomechanics right, because the nervous system exercises, sometimes they will open up the range of motion and really change the movement and breathing, but not always. And when you can combine the nervous system work with structural, understanding the geometry of the body, or even teaching, like I, when I work with people online, I just, I mean, I have my form of energy work, but I also teach them to treat their own geometry. And it's a really, really powerful combination. And then like adding the story piece in it. So to me, there's like this neuro, geo, mytho trinity of things that really goes into it. And I was even really reminded this week, I had a one of my long-term clients come in, and she's having a recurrence of a tumor that is affecting her spinal cord, like in her nerves.
Okay.
And so she's got some like legitimate, like very real weakness that, and but when you but she like she walked out massively better than she walked in. And it was so fun just to see, to be able to put all of that together and see it really change her ability to recruit her muscles and to have more stability. And like it's just, and there's so much joy in that for me and for the patient. And it's really, like it's just, it's endlessly delightful to see it all work together.
And how rewarding is that to know that you had, you were able to help her, and especially, your client with the suicide plan. I mean, suicide and depression is so huge right now. I mean, I've
Yeah.
known in 5 years, 8 people. It's just tragic that
Yeah.
we're having an overload of anxiety in our society.
Yeah. If anybody has connections with researchers that want to study this, I am all in. I've been asking, I've been trying to get universities to helped me research this for a while, and I haven't, like, I think I'm just gonna have to do it myself, which is, I'm very much the artist in all of this, but like, I really don't want, like, I know what I, like, I really want someone else to study this. Like, I know this works. Like, I want to give them the parameters and be like, please go study this because I think it could. I've taught medical residents how to identify suicide, you know, and anxiety and things like that just by evaluating somebody's body and evaluating their breath, you know, to really have that physical exam because it tells you so much about what's going on in their body. And we're all collectively undertouched.
Right. So if anyone listening to the podcast today has a research background, reach out to us and I'll connect you with Melanie, because I think that would be a fascinating study to do
Yeah,
and
for
much
all
needed.
totally for all of my soft skills, you know, like this is, I can put numbers to this. Like this is, I know exactly like how to put numbers to this situation. So, you know, it's very predictable and it's always the same. And the only if every now and then I don't when I ask somebody like if they've been contemplating suicide, I get two answers when I ask, like when somebody's really locked up and I ask this question. It is, they will either say, yes, I've been contemplating suicide, or they'll say, no, but I feel like I'm dying on the inside.
Oh,
And
that's tragic.
those are the two
So
answers I get
tragic.
with it, you know,
Very
that it, and
tragic.
so it's, but it's really how your body is informing your brain. And when you can get things more open in the body, then they're able to have different thoughts, you know, and we all beat ourselves up over our thoughts, or it can be very hard to get out of a depressed state or out of
It's
an
like a
anxious
loop.
state.
It's a
And
negative loop that we feed ourselves sometimes.
and certainly reminding yourself that you have a body or that you're in a body and kind of mapping that body can more clearly. But like people with anxiety are, they're breathing in a way that is supporting the anxious emotions as well. And you know, we all, whatever mood or what, you know, like we all know when somebody is walking joyfully, you know, somebody comes strutting in the office or a little, you know, bouncing, a little bounce in their step or something like that. And we all kind of know when somebody's walking in shame, like when they're holding their heads down, you know.
Well, energetically, you feel it, the vibration coming off someone that is depressed, you can feel that as heavy, or someone joyful, you feel lighter
Sure, but
around them.
you can see it in their movement too.
You
And
can both,
when
yeah.
you pick a different movement pattern, you get a different mood. And it
Right.
can be, you know, like we're all just, you know, and I will say, I mean, I had my own decades of suicide ideation. Like, so I get, like, I've lived this. I understand, like, I really understand that you, like if you can pick a different, like we're all, like I was just really well practiced at being in suicide ideation at some level too.
I'm
And
sorry you had to
so
go through that.
being able, oh, thank you. It's it, well, I think I really value it now because like I see, you know, because of where it's been able to help me help others, you know, that we get these, you know, and it's just part of like, it's just part of the contrast in my own life experience. And so being, but when we're, when we pick a different movement pattern, and one of the things that really is, you know, that we all collectively deal with, you know, in having cell phones right now, like we all know that shame has a posture, like when we hang our heads down and, you know, around our shoulders and everything, we all spend all day in that posture looking at our phones and our computers.
Oh, that's a good point.
And our old brain, you know, our evolved brain does not know that we're looking at a phone. It just knows that we're hanging our head in shame and that we're reinforcing our shame circuits that have existed for millions of years. And shame
Interesting.
is part of, you know, it's an important emotion in that it helps keep us to be part of the herd, you know, and, you know, it can serve some valuable functions collectively, but we need to spend more time looking up at the sky and not focusing, you know, not always having our vision go down and inward. We need our vision to go up and outward as well.
That's a good point. And I think when we're looking outward more than inward, sometimes when you're having compassion for other people and helping other people, it raises your mood too, and the way you feel and your joy. I mean, if you do a random act of kindness, it makes me feel good all day. Just a
There's
simple act of letting somebody in when it's super busy on the road and they like wave at you, like, oh, I can finally get out. It makes you feel good. Just those little things that you can do every day.
it is the research around like focusing on the other is really interesting. Even like I would include this in prayer, praying for someone else, as well as like if you're doing a manifesting exercise, but focusing on what the other person wants versus what you want, that when you focus on what the other wants, that things open up for yourself in really amazing ways. And there's some very cool research
And it's very,
that
very true.
supports
I know
us.
that in my own life that's been true. So it's fascinating, but I think everyone listening just needs to realize that they're unconditionally loved, they're whole, and they're perfect as they are right now, and that reaching out for help shows strength.
Oh, it really does. It takes, I am not, I mean, Americans especially, but like, and I, like it's hard to, it can be really hard to ask for help, but it's also how we're wired for that togetherness.
Oh, connection is so important. And I think that's why, the years of COVID affected all of us, and we're still going through the after effects of not having those needed connections. And it's proven that online connections do not compare with going to lunch with a friend or going for a walk with someone and talking face to face.
Yeah, well, and that loneliness is really shows up in your vagus nerve, or that's one of the markers of it. Like solar and when solar and space weather disrupt the electromagnetic field of the Earth, it's measurable in your vagus nerves, and the
Wow.
extent to which it's measurable depends on the strength of your interpersonal connections. So the lonelier you are, the more likely you are to be blown about by those solar and space weather fluctuations.
It's fascinating. What do you think about the seven planets lining up this month? How does that affect our body?
Well, there's a lot going on with the Pisces Virgo axis right now, that when things are in a big but I think this is just how, like, we've been on the cusp of. There's been a lot of similarities in the sky right now to where planets were leading into the Civil War and leading into World War II as well. And so we're seeing
Okay.
some of those, some of those energies play out in the, like, at least in the infighting in the US. And certainly there's a lot of authoritarianism popping up worldwide.
Right.
And I think that we just, where I think we're often kind of like fish that don't know the water exists, that we're just swimming in these authoritarian, pre-war wa waters. But we have to, but we certainly have choice in terms of how it, like I think I was a military wife for 20 years. Like, I really think that we need a new kind of warrior and a new way to have revolutions. And it's fun to see, it's coming. You can see in the way that people are like, oh, we know war is different now. Fighting can be different because we've got drones and people, there are cyber attacks and things like that, that wouldn't have existed. So we know that fighting is, as Neptune goes into Aries, fighting is going to be different going forward. But the biggest revolution I think that we can all have is knowing your inner authority relative to external authority. Through religion and politics, like, humans, we tend to like, when someone else can take a lot of the decision making off of our plate, that feels comfortable to and safe to a lot of us, to give us that structure. But when you can really be in touch with your own inner authority, that is the most magical and revolutionary thing that you can do, because we're just seeing all of this happen outside of ourselves because it is happening inside. And when we can really know our inner authority through our body. Like, how does your body say yes? And how does your body say no? People that come to me in chronic pain and anxiety and depression, their body, they've been saying yes and their body's been saying no for just way too long. And it's,
It's an interesting concept because I teach yoga too and movement, and people aren't body conscious. So, as I call it a moving meditation, I ask people, how does your body feel when we go to the left side, which is feminine, or the right side, which is masculine? And they do feel a difference. Even in your hips, you feel a difference in
yeah.
how you hold anxiety and stress as women. So, this is so fascinating. And I feel like you are a lifelong learner, and that's how I am. I want to learn more and read more, and because it is fascinating. How long have you studied astrology?
Oh, astrology has probably been part of, let me think, it's 2025, probably since like, probably 12, the last 12 years
And
or
there's
so.
so
I've
much,
been, oh,
isn't
there's so
there?
much. It's endless, and my part of it, right? There's endless. I mean, I've really had to let go because I love to know everything. But like my part is really the anatomy and and getting your what I call your zodiacal skeleton organized so that you can hang your personal planets on it and have the best possible expression, of your life and of your, I think we, when you have a nice stable zodiacal skeleton, then like to me, that's really the definition of resilience. And I think people get there a lot of different ways through other healing. Like there are many ways to heal. I just have a more, I mean, that's my gift to the
Right.
world.
And
What I'm bringing into the world is, directing it in that way. Because like if your ram's horns in your head are all askew, like you're not going to be, like you're going to have some limited motion. You might have some pain and you're going to have some difficulty thinking clearly.
I saw that you were referred to as the body whisperer.
Yes, no, that was a very, my patience over the years, because
I love it.
my touch is so gentle. I tend not to, or all of my training was with like 5 grams of force, which is the weight of a nickel. So it's very,
Very
very,
light.
very light and very subtle. And so then my favorite reaction for patients is when they get up off the table and they turn around and they can't, like they're looking for their pain, like where did it, like it should be somewhere in the room and they can't find it. And then I even enjoy it a little bit more when then they get angry because
Oh,
they don't
really?
think it should have been that easy to get better because they've worked so hard to get better. And then when I show them that it could be easy to get better, that sometimes brings up a lot of anger, because, and grief, and for all the t they're like, why didn't I know this sooner? Why doesn't the rest of the world know how to do this? And
Right.
sometimes it is like it can be, it just can be really surprisingly easy. I have one patient I've seen on and off for the last couple of years, and she had, like her eyes really just weren't very well coordinated. And like I did a couple eye things with her and, followed by a little bit of vision exercise. And like, I mean, she thinks I should start a cult. She's like, Melanie, this is why people develop. Because it was just so magical for her. And it was just getting her like this much, the teeny, teeny bit more organized in her body and in her nervous system made it like, basically took away 12 years of ridiculous pain that nobody could figure out and
That
left
is
her on
wonderful.
disability. I mean, it was, yeah. And so like it can be, I definitely play this game of like, oh, how easy can it get, or what, one, two, or three things, from years of seeing complicated chronic pain patients, the game that I didn't realize was so valuable that I was playing with myself at the time was, what one, two, or three things can I do to make 10, 20, or 30 things better for this person? And so like I've gotten very fluent in the things that can create some really, some change to kind of catapult you into a new way of
It's
being.
profound results.
It's really, it is. Yeah. And of course, like, sometimes there's work, I mean, there's life, everybody goes back to their life and sometimes you get caught in the, like back in the pattern, but that's where realizing like, oh, am I trying to be the hero and, my partner in children's stories, but not being the, at the expense of being the hero in my own story, and where, like, where is the, where is the pattern that I need to break? And spirituality, really, in the research, like, nothing comes close to spirituality for mental health issues and having, and it's a very important part of physical health, like in longevity medicine, having a spirituality. And spirituality is that relationship with your inner authority. They separate it for, it's not religion, like that religion is external authority, but having that relationship with your inner guidance is incredibly important. And when people, we are certainly very much dissociated now, but there's a lot of overlap in the brain activity between dissociation, spiritual experiences, even epilepsy, and also the brains of psychic mediums that they've studied. And the difference between somebody that's dissociated and somebody that's having a spiritual experience or a, is a psychic medium,
I'm a
that's been
psychic
valid,
medium, so
that's
my
been,
brain would literally look different.
that's been validated, in the research, is that, like, the mediums and the spiritual experiences, like, you dissociate, but you come back with information. So it's like a reconnaissance mission. When you just dissociate and don't come back with information, that is really stressful. So, like, I don't think that, I think people that dissociate really, I mean, I get it, like, yes, be in your body, but I think that they're like, that dissociation can be used very strategically as well. Oh, let me go get the information and come back into my body with it.
That's great. Well, I could talk to you forever. You're just fascinating, and you just put it all together, and you're doing life-changing work for your patients. So,
Thank you. Yes. Well, and
yeah.
I'm launching, I'm getting ready to teach it all to everybody in April. I'm going to launch a program called Heretical Healing.
Oh, I love it. And I was just going to ask you, how can our listeners find you?
Yeah. Everything is at my website, melanieweller.com. There's lots of free resources. There's a Zodiac and the Vagus Nerve workbook. There's a email series called Sacred Stomp that you can sign up for that's free. I do once a month, I co-host an event called Rewiring Religion.
I
That's
love
also
it.
free. And then I'm launching the Heretical Healing program. And I have my own podcast, Fearless Presence, and I'm launching a Rewiring Religion podcast too.
Oh, I
So
love it. You are a busy, busy
busy, busy.
lady.
All
You
good
are a
stuff.
doer, doer. That's
Go,
at Aries. Go, go, go.
go, go. Yep.
Go, go, go. Well, I always pick an intuitive heart oracle card. And today's I picked was Feel Your Soul Soar, Pure Bliss. Sing your favorite song full blast. Do what makes you happiest. You deserve joy in your life. Rearrange your plans and have fun today. Feel your soul soar. Yes, you can do whatever you set your mind to. Lift yourself higher and higher in vibration with your soul. Bliss, joy, peace, and transcendence are yours. It's a choice. So I want to thank you. It's been fascinating talking to you, and I can't wait to listen to your podcast and go to your website and look at everything that you've got that you're helping and healing souls, just like the healing
Thank you,
soul.
Mary Beth. Well, thank you for sharing your platform with me. I very much appreciate that helps me. My karmic backstory is lost voice, so having you share your platform is very healing for me. So thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it. And thank all of our listeners for listening and our viewers. And know that God loves you, and so do I, empowering wellness and oneness. Thank you.